If it heads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 73, Spotlight on L'Atelier. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined as always with my co-host, Rob Grass. We are broadcast around the world on Cigar Federation and, of course, picked up on YouTube and all of the lovely people all over the world keeping us safe in the Armed Forces Radio Network. If you're listening to my podcast, Podbean, iTunes, Play Store, Stitcher, any of the billion podcast apps out there, we certainly appreciate you tuning in. You can feel free to drop a line to the show at surgeon@cigarfederation.com or rob@cigarfederation.com. Love hearing from you. Rob, what's going on, brother?
Oh, you know, same old stuff, man. Just got back from a nice afternoon at the ballpark. Another Giants win. They're playing nice. Good baseball right now.
It's a nice way to spend the afternoon, right?
Yeah, it's a day game. I'm not a big fan of getting to and from day games, but driving home from San Francisco at like 3:30 in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, it's not good. So I always take the BART. Yeah, good times, man. And I've got three good beers lined up, or at least I hope they're good. I haven't had them yet.
Makes for more entertaining radio if it isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely smoking a good cigar. So things are good.
Right?
Things are
so
good.
We'll get right into it because my cigar isn't super long, but it's super tasty. And this is, of course, the L'Atelier La Mission. If you haven't checked out our review at CigarFederation.com, check it out because I was all over this. This is the 1959. It's 4 3/4 by 52 ring gauge. So a little shorter than a normal Robusto, but same ring gauge size. And of course, it sports that wrapper that everybody's using, that San Andreas Mexican. Everyone loves it. I love it. Robbie loves it. It's got a Nicaraguan wrapper, and it's got Nicaraguan and Sancti Spiritus filler, which sounds much cooler when Pete's talking about it. He makes it sound all romantic and stuff. We had Pete on our Cigar Chat show just a few weeks ago. Well, I guess actually about a month ago. And if you haven't checked that out, you should go to YouTube or podcast and check that out because it's a really good show.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our best, actually. It's always nice when you get somebody like Pete on the show and he sticks around for another 45 minutes after the show's over to keep answering questions. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Pete doesn't
care. I'm smoking the original L'Atelier, and this is their event only Robusto size.
Fancy.
So it's not like the lat 56 or 54 or 52. I guess it would be the lat 50 if it was anything.
Yeah,
it's a five. I believe it's just a straight up 5x50. Sancti Spiritus, Ecuadorian wrapper. Nicaraguan binder and filler. I freaking love this cigar. It's been around for a couple of years. So L'Atelier, I guess, what year is it? 2016. So
the year that cigars died.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not. But this came out probably 3 years ago, maybe four. Yeah. They've been around for a while. But this was their original release. I love it. It's like a medium strength cigar, full flavor, smooth. Got some buttery, toasty notes in there, some spice. This I was actually smoking during, we had the L'Atelier boys on Cigar Chat fairly recently, and I was smoking this cigar, and I was pairing it with a rye pale ale, and it was fantastic. Ooh. The pairing was really, really good. And I'm actually going with a rye pale ale tonight. I think that's what I'm going to start with. But the pairing was great, so I was really eager to do this. I know we're smoking different cigars. But I didn't have a La Mission, unfortunately. That's a fantastic smoke. Much more on the fuller strength end than what I'm smoking. But that's the cigar that I don't want to say put L'Atelier on the map, but I think that's the one that maybe brought them to the next level.
That was kind of a big release. And I think when I rated it, I gave it a box split. But I'm just a fat liar because I went out and bought a box. I mean, to be fair, though, it's a weird box count. I think the box counts are 18. So it's not a 20 or 24 or 25.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so the price is actually pretty approachable. I mean, they're not expensive cigars really to begin with, but I looked at it and I said, do I want a fiver? Do I really want a fiver? Do I want a half box? And I'm like, no, don't be a Nancy, get a full box. So I did. And I'm glad I did because it's a delicious cigar.
I need to track that one down in the Lonsdale size. And I don't know what year that is. And the cigar has got the La Mission is a wine that's like a 100-point rated wine. And so they have a different Vitola for each year that was rated 100 points by whoever rates wine. I don't know. But that's the story behind that. And there's a few different sizes. And I hear that the Lonsdale is the bee's knees, as the kids say. So I do want to. And plus, I love me a Lonsdale. So You know how that is.
Stefan from our chat room. Thanks, Stefan. He says it's the 1955 for the Lonsdale.
The 55. Okay. The
55.
And so which one are you smoking?
This is the 1959.
59. Okay. So this La Mission wine was big in the 50s, but I think there's some like in the 70s and 80s too. So whatever. Cool. I know very little about wine. I know how to drink it. But that's about it.
Yeah, I love drinking it. I could get my wine on all the time. So talking a little bit about how this La Mission smokes, and you know, you can read the detailed notes of pepper and whatever other things that I came up with in my review. But this is a cigar that just starts out with tons of powdered cocoa. And, you know, it is a full-bodied cigar, but it doesn't feel like it. And I love cigars that kind of creep up on you where they've just got so much flavor going on. And the strength is there, but you don't know. You know, it's floating like a butterfly. And it just starts out really nice, and then it'll develop as we get to the halfway point, which is good because I kind of timed it to hopefully match up with these beers. But so far, so good. Like I said, just tons of powdered cocoa. How's that lat for you starting?
Oh, it's fantastic. I like I said, this got a lot of those kind of toasted, buttery notes for me. There's a little bit of that baking spice on the tongue. You get that on the retrohale as well. Creamy profile. And these are all those, if you know me and you follow my reviews, you know my palate a little bit. That's the kind of stuff that falls right smack dab in my wheelhouse. This is a cigar that, frankly, I don't smoke enough. Like I could smoke this all the time. And this would be one of those cigars that if it were to go away, because somebody arbitrarily decided that it needed to, I would be very, very sad.
I hear that. So we'll hop right in. It's a nice night. The wind's finally died down, so I was kind of worried I was going to get frozen out here. So I'm wearing a long sleeve shirt, like some kind of whatever, but whatever. So first up, I'm going kind of in order tonight. I'm going with lager, porter, and a stout-ish. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But first up, I got classic Innocent Gun. I love Innocent Gun. It's an approachable beer. They make a lot of different wonderful beers. Many of them are aged in ex whiskey casks, which is adds just a nice flavor to it. The Innocent Gun, this is a lager. I'll show you the color of this. And I had to compete on beer glasses because I know you bring the beer glass. So you see, nice. I got the full-on Innocent Gun glass there just to represent brewed in Scotland.
It's just to clarify, because it sounds like it took me a second to figure out the company you were talking about. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're saying Innocent Gun, but it's nice. Innis.
Stupid Canadians talking too fast. Enunciate your values. Innocent Gun.
I still hear Innocent Gun.
That's funny. It's probably Innocent Gun or something like that if it's in Scotland, because they run it together. But regardless, what's cool about Innocent Gun is 2002 is really when they sort of took off with aging beer in whiskey casks, because they had basically had a whiskey distillery come to them and wanted to do the reverse. They wanted to take some of the beer casks and put their whiskey in it. So ended up being kind of a cool project. This lager is, you know, pretty typical lager. It's only 4.6% ABV, so it's not a heater. They use lager malt. They use Naked Gold notes for the malts. For the hops, they use Super and Styrian. And they say it smells, the nose in this is lemon zest, macadamia nuts, and sweet biscuity malt. I know that the English and the Scots really like to talk about biscuits on flavor notes, and obviously I just don't eat enough biscuits to know. But I definitely get like a wet, grainy smell off of it, which is really nice, really approachable. And they say the taste is crisp and light with soft aromatic hops and creaminess. And I've already had a couple sips, and it's a really nice lager. It's creamy. It's got a little bit of body to it, so it's not thin, because nothing I hate more than a thin lager. But so far, so good. So I'm going to take some sips and let you talk about your first beer.
Cool. So I am going with a few different offerings from the Sierra Nevada Beer Camp Across America Collaboration 12-pack. Now, just a little bit of background on that. And actually, I don't have their website pulled up.
Awkward.
Well, I have the site for the... For the beers, but anyway, so it's a collaboration there. It's all seasonally available. It's a collaboration between Sierra Nevada and 30 other breweries.
Oh, wow.
And they come up with, it's six beers. So 30 breweries, six beers. So obviously they didn't all, it's five breweries plus Sierra Nevada working on each brew. And they come from, you know, different parts of the country. So there's the Sweet Sunny South, which is a Southern table beer, which recently reviewed on mixedandmashed.com, which is more of a saison, but it's actually really quite good. And you know, they kind of go throughout the thing, and I'll talk about each individual beer that I'm going with tonight. I'm going straight ABV order tonight, pretty much. And the first one that I'm starting with here is the Patriot Revolutionary Pale Ale, and they spelled Patriot kind of interesting. It's Pat Rye Ott, so it's got a little bit of rye in here. And this is brewed with apples. This pale ale features rye and apples alongside a hearty dose of bold American hops. And for a light-bodied and modern take on a recipe steeped in traditional flavors. So it's kind of interesting. They do like kind of an old meets new, I'm just getting this basically from their website, take on pale ale, where the brewers, they're all located in the 13 original colonies, these particular brewers, and I'll tell you who the brewers are in a second. It features rye and apples, like I just said, which were among the first ingredients used by American brewers in the colonies alongside American bold hops. Hallmarks for our modern craft beer quote unquote revolution. Now, this is a collaboration between Devil's Backbone Brewing, Dogfish Head, Lawson's Finest Liquids, Stouts Brewing Company, STOUDTS, and Trillium Brewing. And this is just a really, really interesting. All these beers in this 12 pack, now, like I said, there's six of them and you get two of each. And it's not cheap. I think the MSRP is $30 for a 12 pack, but I think Safeway had them for 24 or something like
that. Yeah, sounds super expensive, Rob. I feel for your brother.
Well, it's more than I would usually spend on a 12 pack. I don't normally buy 12 packs. I'm usually getting like 4 packs. Although I pick up a 4 pack of KBS for $25 and I'm happy about it. So
no kidding.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm getting 12 beers for the price of four. Anyway, 5.6 ABV, 55 IBUs. Again, it's a pale ale. They give a lot of information on their website, which is cool. They use ale yeast. They're bittering hops. Like I said, bittering hops go into the boil first. They're using cluster. And they're finishing hops for flavor and aroma. It says experimental hops, whatever those are. They use two-row pale, which is a very basic base malt. Anytime you're making an IPA or a pale ale, you're going to use some form of two-row. They add some rye and some crystal malts. The rye is for flavor. Crystal is for... They probably used a light Lovibond crystal because the color on this is still pretty light.
I mean,
this is right smack dab in the middle of pale ale there.
Almost like an IPA color.
It's lighter actually than many IPAs. It says they used Delaware and Vermont apple cider and blah, blah, blah. I went through all the tasting notes and stuff. So I actually haven't had a chance to fire this one up yet. I'm really interested. I can totally smell the apples on the nose. And a lot of it, I wonder how susceptible I am to placebo because I see that there's apples there, and it's like, oh yeah, I totally smell apples.
Yeah,
but they smell pretty. This has a fall kind of smell to it, as that apple cider smells. So I think I probably would have picked up on that anyway. But why don't you jump in, talk about your pairing a little bit, and I'll see if I can get gooned over here in a few minutes.
Copy that. Before I do, I just want to remind our audience who are tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 73, broadcast on CigarFederation.com, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world, keeping us safe. We appreciate it. Hope you're comfortable. Hope you're being entertained. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined by Rob, my co-host, Rob Uras. And of course, we talked last week about the podcast awards. The podcast awards are finished. Thank you, everyone who voted and supported us. We don't know what the tally is, but hopefully we'll know soon. The awards are coming up on the 22nd, I believe. I'll have to double check that. It's either the 22nd or the 26th, but we'll send a communication out regardless. We know. So talking about pairings, because that's where we're here. So I'm pairing the L'Atelier La Mission, the Maduro, with an Innocent Gun Lager. This is an easy pairing. This is almost a cheating pairing. The lager doesn't have that sort of sour, or I shouldn't say sour, but you know how lagers can sometimes have kind of a funky quality to them, like they finish a little almost metallic? I'm pretty picky when it comes to lagers. I either find a lot of lagers too thin, or they finish kind of in a funky way. This Innocent Gun is like, and I don't want to throw it too high accolades, but I would call this like top lager for me. It's just, this is a lager. I could have three of these in a night and I'd be super happy. It's creamy. It refreshes my palate. It's got a great body mouthfeel to it. The flavors aren't too strong, so they're complementing the cigar well. They're bringing kind of a funky leather and almost like a peanut, like an unsalted peanut in the post-draw on the cigar. But other than that, I mean, this is a no-brainer pairing. This is going really well. I can't have nothing to complain about for this pairing at all.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. And again, this was almost like a cheating pairing for me too, because I'd kind of done this before. Although the rye, and actually the rye that I had it with, I think it was a rye lager, and it wasn't a rye pale ale. So I went into this with an idea that I'm definitely going to pair with this particular beer. Now I'm getting, the beer is great. It's crisp. It's got nice bittering from those hops up front. It's got some of that apple flavor in there that they're talking about. You definitely get that rye spice. And I'm really coming around on beers that have rye in it.
You don't find, sorry to cut you off, you don't find that apple funky at all?
No, it's how do you explain it? It's not overpowering, but it's definitely there. It's more like
an accent?
Yeah, but it's like if there's a flavor in your cigar that you're only getting on the retrohale, where you can almost kind of ignore it if you want to.
I got you.
I don't know if I'm explaining that right.
Yeah, but totally. Picking
I know
what you're
in my head
now.
What I mean. It's there, and I think it actually kind of works with the creaminess of the cigar. They kind of go hand in hand. I'm getting this. Here it is. This is why it pairs really well. The flavors that I'm getting from this beer are bringing out a kind of like a burnt caramel in the cigar. Huh. So maybe that's what's pairing. That's what's making the apple not. And again, it's not apple like you're drinking an apple cider. It's more like the essence of apple, if you will. The apple aura. Just the aura.
Apple and the beer were in the same room for too long, and you know some of the influence rubbed off, and you can barely.
That's it. It's just essence of the apple. But the beer itself is quite good. It's crisp. It doesn't linger too long on the finish. It's bitter up front, and it kind of finishes kind of crisp. There's a little bit of bitterness on the end as well, but I think they're pairing well. I don't know that anything is enhanced. I am getting that kind of burnt caramel out of the cigar that I wasn't getting before. Still getting that toasty note, the little toasted bread note, the little caramel it added in, maybe some nuttiness in there as well, and some spice. But the spice is more like a cinnamon. It's got kind of, I'm describing it like it sounds like a fall afternoon, but it's not really how it tastes.
Kind of takes you to that fall afternoon.
I feel like I'm stumbling on it a bit. I like it, and I'm just having a hard time explaining it, I guess.
I'm picking up what you're laying down. This pairing, very easy. I would rate it a B+. I know we don't normally do ratings, but for me, it's a B+. It's easy. La Mission and an Innocent Gun Lager, no-brainer. Absolutely no-brainer, especially if you like beer. So I'm going to move on to my second pairing.
But before you do that, I just took a couple more puffs and a couple more sips. And I really do. There is kind of a caramel apple thing on the finish here.
Interesting.
And it does kind of have that, the way I was describing, kind of a fall a vibe to it. Not quite like a mulled cider, but it's in that vein. And when they say it's apple cider, it's a pale ale, but it's got that rye and it's there's a little bit of spice. It's kind of trending in that direction. And the finish, the creamy finish from the cigar really does kind of bring everything together. I just wanted to chime in because it really is good. I just don't feel like I'm doing a good job of describing it, but getting that caramel apple thing on the finish there really does kind of solidify it in my mind.
I gotcha. So I'm super eager to move on to my second beer because this is kind of become a staple for me. This is the Odyssey Nitro Porter from Phillips. Ooh. I don't know if you've had a chance to have this, but I was introduced by a wonderful Fed head out there. He knows who he is, who took me on a tour of Seattle. And I was introduced to the wonders of what nitrogen can do to a beer versus just straight up CO2 or oak aged. And this is a nitrogen injected porter, and it just gives it this incredible body and creaminess to it. Actually, I'll hold it up before I talk about the brewery, but good porter color. You can see that. Nice and creamy head. And I'm very happy with myself that I did not screw up the pour, because it is sometimes tough, I find, with the nitro porter. The moment you crack the top and start pouring, it can just go all over the place. You can really screw up the pour. So I'm glad I did not. Anyways, talking about the brewery. Phillips Brewing Company, located in Victoria, BC. Started by, of course, as per the name, Matt Phillips. He did his first brew in 2001, which was an espresso stout, a raspberry wheat ale, and a bold hopped IPA. So I already talked about the nitro porter being infused with nitrogen gas. Now you look at this color, And this is kind of one of those things, like in cigars, where you can't judge a cigar by its wrapper. You can't really judge a beer by its color, because you look at that and you're like, well, you know, it's probably in the 6 to 7, maybe 8%, because it's not even a dark brown. It's black. It's a dark porter color. But this bad boy is only 5% ABV. They say that it's got warm roasted flavors with accents of nuts and dark chocolate. For me, I typically get a little bit of coffee. I get a lot of chocolate, but for me, I drink this because it's so creamy and it's just so great on the palate. I have not paired it with any L'Atelier cigars yet, so I'm pretty excited to get my pairing on, and I'll give you a chance here to talk about your second pairing.
Yeah, that's a good looking beer right there. If I were to come across that beer, I'd definitely pick it up just based on the can alone. It's got like a Zeppelin flying across the front, and
yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah, that's nice.
Love the super cans too.
Yeah, I do like a good nitro. If you get a chance to get your hands on the milk stout from Left Hand milk stout and get the nitro, that's legit. Anyway, so for my second pairing, this one's kind of fun. It is the Moxymoron Imperial Session IPA, which I just think that the whole name is very, very cute. Imperial Session IPA. That comes in at 7.5% alcohol by volume. Woo! So it's not a session IPA at all. And that's why they call it an Imperial Session. So it's basically just an IPA. and the idea behind the name is the city of Moxie, Washington. It's in the heart of the Yumica Valley hop growing region. And that's where Imperial Session IPA, a style contradiction, honors the Pacific Northwest hop bomb heritage. Moxymoron features hops in the mash, the kettle, the hop torpedo, and I don't know what that is. And the fermenter for ultra complex hop aromas and flavors in an ironically named package. So they're hopping the proverbial crap out of this beer. Let's see what they're using. Like I said, 7.5% alcohol by volume, only 70 IBUs, which seems kind of low based on the way they described it.
Yeah, for an Imperial IPA, yeah.
It doesn't taste. It's not blowing me away with hoppiness. So I think it's technically an IPA. I think Imperial IPA is 8 and above.
Yeah.
If memory serves, this is 7.5. So it's an Imperial Session, which would make it just a basic IPA. So Imperial and Session cancel each other out. They're using basic ale yeast. Their bittering hops are Simcoe and Mosaic, very common Northwest hops. Finishing hops of Simcoe, Mosaic, Citra, and Experimental. The ever-present Experimental hops. Again, two-row pale malt is spread their base malt. They're using some Pilsner, Munich, and wheat. You can definitely, with the wheat, wheat's not giving you a ton of flavor when you're using it in an IPA. It's just giving you that body, that creaminess, that mouthfeel. You can definitely get that. And you can even really kind of tell when you see the head on it and how it kind of it clings to the glass. So you're definitely getting that creaminess. The lacing on the glass there. It's an interesting concept. I really like the name, but I had a couple of sips. Very fruit forward. It's creamy. It reminds me of the IPA that you were talking about, John, from Sierra Nevada. The Torpedo IPA, which has that kind of creamy texture to it. So I think you would dig this one. There's a lot of fruit going on. Definitely fruit forward. Bitter up front, bitter finish. And definitely got, I mean, fruit from all across the board. I mean, you got citrus and there's a tropical, which you're going to get in a lot of IPAs anyway. But there's some kind of more jammy fruit notes in here than normal. I'm going to jump in and take a few more sips and see how yours is going. I did cheat while you were talking, and the pairing was pretty good right off the bat. So hopefully that continues.
Before you take a sip, we've got an audience question that's relevant. I think you already touched on it. Stefan Lindblad, thanks very much for your question and his trivia question of the day, which again, you already answered, but I just want you to reiterate for our customers, for our audience out there. Why is Moxie in the title of Moxymoron IPA?
Okay. So there was a discussion on Cigar Federation when I posted the photo. Let me see where that popped up. Because somebody was saying, I hope it doesn't taste like Moxie soda. And I don't know what the hell Moxie soda is, but I think it's probably something that we didn't get out here on the West Coast. Jeff says, I hope Moxymoron doesn't taste like the soft drink Moxie. You're in for a real treat. And then Stefan wanted to know, why is it called, why do they call it Moxie? Obviously, I did answer that question already, but I'll reiterate. The Moxie Washington is right in the middle of that Yimica. I think I'm saying that right. Yakima, sorry.
Not Yakima.
Yakima. Yimica. Yakima Valley.
It's when the Israelis came and settled Washington, in the middle of Washington.
Yeah, maybe. The
Yimica.
Yakima Valley, not
yes,
Yimica.
Yakima.
Yakima Valley. And so that's, I mean, a ton of hops come out of there. And I would imagine, I believe that every single hop that is used in this is grown in that area. I know that that's where Simcoe Mosaic and Citra come from. Experimental, I imagine the experimental hop comes from there as well. But yeah, I took a couple more sips. And dude, this is creamy as hell. This is really good.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about my pairing and talking about creamy as hell. This Nitro Porter, I mean, I know they talk about all of these flavors and nuts and the dark chocolate. And it does have some sort of underlying fruity notes to it, which are very subtle. The chocolate isn't pronounced for me, probably because I'm getting so much cocoa off the cigar. But the creaminess off of this is like, it's just, if you had sliders for a beer and you could kind of dial it in, this is like a 9.5 out of 10 for creaminess. Like you can't exude more creaminess out of a beer unless this was ice cream. In fact, that makes me think this with some kind of dessert thing, mixing this with vanilla ice cream would kind of be the bomb. But talking about the pairing, and I don't know if I've gotten to the point in the cigar where it starts to get a little spicy. So it's got some nice bite to it in the retrohale. But again, it's balanced. And I love that the way this cigar is blended is it's blended with body. It's not blended for one note to just take you out and shoot you in the back of the head behind the barnyard. It's subtle. It creeps up on you. So I take a retrohale. I get a lot of spice, but it doesn't just wreck me. And what's nice is I'm at the point where I've got this really creamy porter, and a creamy porter, you know, takes care of that. Like if it's too much spice for me, I can just take a sip of the porter. So this is going really well. It's definitely a different pairing than the first one, but in so many ways, it's just as good. It's a different style of pairing. I think in this case, the beer is maybe getting a little bit lost in the cigar because the cigar has so much character to it that the character of the porter can't really shine through, but I'm happy with the pairing so far.
This is and I'm going to say this is unequivocal, bam, put a stamp on it, the best IPA pairing I've ever had.
Wow.
This is it.
That's a huge statement.
No, this is the best IPA pairing that I've ever had, ever. I'm not saying it's the best IPA I've had, but it's the best IPA pairing I've ever had. This Atelier is giving me that toasty, buttery notes, right, that I was talking about before. There's a little bit of that spice. And this Moxymoron is so fruity and so creamy that it's like this is the jam on my toast. It's wow. So freaking good. And there's that just enough bitterness up front. You're going to love this IPA. I think you're going to freaking love this. And I think that they're only making these in the 12 pack, so you have to buy the whole thing. If this came in a 6-pack on its own, I'd go pick one up right now. It's really, really good. I'm really digging it. You know what I didn't do was talk about who is involved in the brewing of this.
Yeah.
I beg your pardon.
Knock it out.
It is the Bailbreaker Brewing Company, Barley Brown's beer, Black Raven, who we've featured on the show before.
There's a lot of alliteration.
Yeah, wow, that is a lot of well played. Yeah, actually, it really is. Melvin Brewing, which has a very interesting logo of an elephant standing on something holding a pint of beer, and Odell Brewing, along with the boys from Sierra Nevada. Very, very good. So far, it's the pairing of the night, and I don't really know how to describe it except for the cigar is the toast and the IPA is the jam. It's the jam. Really, really good. Super creamy. Lots of flavor, great mouthfeel. That wheat that's in there really does kind of – I'm surprised it's so clear if they use wheat. They didn't use a ton of it, I guess. But this is fantastic. I'm really enjoying it.
Just a reminder to our audience, you're tuned to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 73, Spotlight on Atelier. We're doing some beer pairings tonight. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, as always, Robbie Rass. We're broadcasting the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners that are out there. Hope you're staying safe. And – talking about this pairing, I mean, this is, it's kind of, again, I think we're kind of in easy pairing mode. This cigar does a really good job of pairing. Obviously, gone from a lager to a porter, but the cigar is still standing up. Both of them are going well, just in different ways. And I feel like I could sit on a patio, finish the cigar, and have that lager or have that porter and be perfectly satisfied. I don't think it's as exciting, perhaps, as your IPA pairing, but it's an easy one. Like it kind of reminds me of, you know, Connecticut Shade and coffee. It just becomes sort of too easy. You kind of want to move out of your comfort zone, but it's good. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I think I've said probably enough about this pairing. I'm looking in the chat room, and Matt says, he says, that's a bold statement. He says, imagine if you had an amazing IPA. Well, we've done this show, and I've done pairings with amazing IPAs. I've tried to pair with Pliny the Elder. I've tried to pair with, Pliny's the one that comes to mind. I'm sure there's some other good ones that we've used. I don't know what you would consider an amazing IPA. I know I haven't done any pairings with like Heady Topper or Hop Slam or anything like that. Zombie Dust even, which I wasn't really impressed with because I think mine was a little bit old. But there's something about this particular blend that goes really, really well with IPAs and pale ales. And I'm not exactly sure what it is. Maybe it's the wrapper. It's definitely the texture and the profile. It leads me to believe that we could probably pair some IPAs with like a Herrera Esteli, the original Herrera Esteli.
Ooh.
Or cigars. Sure idea. Or cigars that are in that vein. I mean, other cigars that come to my head is the Hermosa, the original release Hermosas. I don't know if you remember those. That has a similar kind of flavor profile. But I feel like we could probably even pair some kind of classic Cuban cigars that might have a little bit of a kick to them as opposed to something that's going to be too light. But that profile with an IPA like this, because it's so fruit forward, and it just pairs so well with that that toasty, buttery, and you know, baking spice. You throw some fruit in there, it's like you're in grandma's bakery and you're having a beer, which sounds kind of awesome. My grandma never had a bakery, and she was gone way before I could drink beer. But if she did and she was still around, I'd go there and drink beer, and hopefully it would be like this.
Yeah, I mean, we've paired a significant amount of IPAs. In fact, I want to say that stouts are probably the number one style we've paired the most, but number two, I think by a landslide, has to be IPAs. And I think almost every show we've done that has beer almost always features an IPA. I think your description sounds really great. I mean, what I like about IPAs is there is such a range. You can get, you know, those really hop forward, piney, bitter IPAs, and you can get everything in between with the creamy fruit forward like you're talking about. And then you can get the ones that are balanced in the middle where you get a little bit of pine, a little bit of fruit. And I like the range of IPAs. I like trying IPAs and rediscovering IPAs. I mean, it's funny that I've gone from, and I blame Matt and his Untappd obsession with, and you, of course, for really getting me into craft beer. And, you know, I've gone from kind of thinking IPAs were funky to really looking forward to an IPA on a hot day.
Yeah, I'm. Matt says that he's in for the. Matt's another mod on Cigar Federation, and he's like the beer expert. We had to like talk him out of, talk him off the ledge with his Untappd. He's checked in like 45,000 times or something like that. It's. We're all getting a little bit concerned, Matt. But
we almost wonder if he works at a brewery at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we know that he works in that cigar shop that he's posting photos from all the time. It's like, it's 12:30 in the afternoon Matt's time, and he's at his lounge having a cigar. God bless him, man.
Tough life.
God bless him. But he says he's in for the Herrera Esteli and IPA show. But yeah, this IPA sits in a really nice spot as far as pairing with this particular cigar. And you know, like you said, they do kind of run the gamut of, you know, more fruit forward, you can get more pine, you get more of that dank flavor. I don't really come around on the danky ones. That's not really my style, but and really, this type, this particular creamy with a kind of a fruit forward, nice, heavy, creamy mouthfeel. Heavy is not the right term. Coating almost, but not overly coating. Coating in a good way.
Viscous?
Sure. whatever. This is more unique for me. And Matt was saying it's more of a New England style. And I'm really familiar, with West Coast IPAs. And you get a lot of that pine. And you get a lot of that tropical fruit.
Yeah,
but this creamier style, if Matt says it's New England, I believe him, and I'm going to have to track down some more New England IPAs because I'm digging this for sure. And I'm curious when this was bottled, because doesn't say, does it? No. But anyway, we can move forward, but I definitely want to talk. I'm going to be bottling my IPA tomorrow. So we can, well, I'll talk about that a little bit in the After Dark segment, because I know how much everybody likes to hear me rattle on about my home brewing escapades.
They know they do. So I'm excited to get into my last pairing here. This one I've been kind of waiting for, not just all night, but really for weeks. This is the Harvest Down, and it's Gaelic, so I'm going to just absolutely tear it up here. It's Ola Dub, and it's the Special 16 Reserve. What does that mean? Well, it means it's been aged in Highland Park 16 whiskey casks for 6 months. They've got three in the series. They've got a 12, they've got a 16, they've got the 18. I'll tell you, the 18 is absolutely outrageous. I mean, if you love that whiskey influence, it's just enough, you know, because you can go too far with whiskey and beer. Same with aging a beer in casks. You can go too far where it just becomes overpowering. And then I think that's easy to do because whiskey is such a strong spirit. But the 18 just hits that exact point where you don't want to go any further and you've gone just far enough. It's very magical. So I'm very excited for the 16. I tried the 12 and it was kind of what I wanted. The 12 was just a hint of whiskey. So you get kind of that influence of whiskey without, you know, it tastes like young whiskey. So you kind of get that hit of whiskey and then the rest of the beer runs it over. And it's nice. It's nice for someone who maybe doesn't like whiskey, but this 16, I'm excited. You can see nice and dark, super thick. I think they describe it as motor oil or engine oil is in terms of thickness. So a little bit about this brewery. They've been around a long, long time in Scotland since 1983. They did a conversion of a 200-year-old farm to a brewery in 1986. And then in 2007 is when they started pairing with Highland Park to use their cask for the 6-month maturation process. And they say that the reason that this beer stands up so well is because it is so thick that it can just take the maturation process and the whiskey. I'd believe it. So again, I talked about it comes in 12, 16, 18, 8% ABV, which is not crazy. I mean, we've certainly had stouts on the show that are way beyond 8. In fact, I'd say if you went back and looked at our shows and took an average ABV, it's got to be in the 9.25 range, maybe even higher. But very cool. So this is the Highland Park 16. So as per the name, the 12 would be the Highland Park 12 and the 18 would be the Highland Park 18. They say that it's got a thick, gloopy base beer that takes on distinct whiskey notes, which is a perfect complement to its roasty, toasty bitterness. So as I'm sure you can imagine, I'm very excited to take a couple sips of this, and I'll try and put myself on mute so I don't make any weird sounds. But please go ahead and talk about your third beer.
I'm really intrigued by this beer. I don't know where you find this stuff.
It smells so good.
But I'm definitely intrigued by that. So for me, I'm going away from the pale ales and the IPAs, and I'm jumping into a robust stout, the Stout of the Union, robust stout to be exact. Again, another Beer Camp Across America collaboration, and these are all based out they're all Sierra Nevada releases, but they're Sierra Nevada collaborations. It's not an album. Collaborations. This beer is in collaboration with Bagby Beer Company, Beechwood Brewing, The Lost Abbey, Smog City, and Sociate. I believe that's how you say it, Sociate. This is the Southern California contingent of of the Stout of the Union, and they're actually having an event down there in a couple of weeks. This one is it's a robust stout with layers of deep malt flavors. That's absolutely positive. Rich and roasty notes of caramel, coffee, cocoa, and dried fruit for a flavorful take on a traditional dark ale. Now, I probably should have, in retrospect, I probably should have done this beer first because the flavor profile is so different from what I was just having. It's taking my palate a few minutes here to kind of come back around. But I'll give the specs, and then I'm going to dive back into this beer and see if I can get some more flavor out of it. 7.3%. And John, you made a good point about the alcohol level when we talk about stouts. And for the most part, with the stouts that we've had a lot of imperial stouts.
Yep.
And you know, imperial porters and things like that. If you go with just like a regular dry Irish stout, you're looking at 5% alcohol.
Yeah, it's quite light. You know?
Yeah, I mean, and this is 7.3, so it's kind of right in the middle there. But you know, definitely hits both sides of the gamut. 64 IBUs. They're using ale yeast. Magnum is their bittering hop. Equinox is their finishing hop. I'm not familiar with Equinox. Magnum, I think, is a bit more of a British style, if memory serves, but could be incorrect. Maris Otter malts is Maris Otter is going to be the base malt for a lot of your dark beers. Munich oats, crystal, chocolate, and roasted barley. The oats, you're going to get a little bit of that creamy texture out of it. And as you can see, I haven't shown you the beer yet, but this is much like the porter you were having, John, very dark, nice lacing, nice creamy head on this thing. I don't get a lot off the nose. And it's just because there's a lot going on in here, I think. If I were to have this in kind of a controlled environment, I'd probably be getting a little bit more off the nose. I just kind of get like a bitter fruity note, oddly enough, off the nose of this. Maybe a little bit of chocolate, but not too much. those are kind of the specs here. I told you the folks that they're working with on this one. I'm definitely curious. I've had some stuff from Smog City. I've had their Gorilla Amarillo or Amarillo Gorilla or something like that. It was an IPA and it was bottled like 3 days before I had it. It was fantastic. But I haven't tried much from any of these other guys. I've heard of, Lost Abbey I've had. This is the first that I've had from Beechwood or Bagby. I've heard of Sociate, and I think I've had a few things from them, but nothing major. So definitely curious to see how this pairing goes and see how yours is. Because that beer that you've got, dude, I definitely want to try that.
It's super delicious. The 16, I guess what's interesting to me, of course, when you try different year releases of whiskey by itself, you're going to get a wide range of different flavors between the 12, the 16, and the 18. 12, typically in Scottish whiskey, is going to be a little young. It's going to have some bite to it. 18 is going to have tons of depth to it, lots of nuances. And the 16 is kind of right in the middle. You know, you get the best of both worlds. It's approachable. You get a little bit more stronger character in terms of some of the flavors. So it's interesting now having the third in the series, which is really the middle in the series, and sort of comparing the notes in my head. It on the nose, I get like this really funky baked, almost like a chocolate croissant. Like, and it's weird for me to get that off of a stout because normally, you know, you'd get coffee or chocolate. Baked goods is not something I expect off the nose.
Fancy.
And when I taste, it's different. And when I taste it, I still get some of that sort of baked sweetness, but with a really short finish because the maltiness in this beer runs it right over. And then it's got that wonderful whiskey finish. And I think what's nice about it is, and I think this is where they've done a great job, is that you could probably go too far with that where, and I've had, you know, bourbon based beers where I've really enjoyed the beer, but the finish is just really, really bourbony. And I don't mind a long finish, but if I'm pairing, that's pretty tough. If you got a long bourbon finish on a beer, it kind of runs between the flavors too much and it kind of runs over the beer flavor and sometimes can be way too much for the cigar. So it's funny because I've gone from the first beer, the lager, where I got a lot of chocolate out of the cigar, the porter, where I was getting a little bit more spices and pepper out of the cigar. And now this beer is just so in your face, even at 8% ABV. You know, we talk about strength versus body in cigars, and here this is definitely the case. It's only 8% ABV, which is the strength, but the body in this beer is just incredible, and it's kind of running the cigar over, but not necessarily in a bad way, because I take a puff of the cigar, and I just get this intense, great, rich sweetness, not overly sickeningly sweet, but just tons of sweetness. So it's good, but sadly not better than the previous two pairings. It's good, but not better. I think it's just a strength issue. There's just too much body in this beer. And I don't, you know, I'm thinking I'd probably have to go something in the Connecticut broadleaf or Pennsylvania broadleaf category to stand up to this cigar. Because I think it's just, it's got too much body. San Andreas Maduro is just not going to stand up to it.
Yeah. That sounds, that sounds like just about anything that's barrel aged. I mean, you need, and we've talked about that. We talked about that on, I don't know if it was the last show or the show before, when you hit that barrel aged point, there's almost too much going on, especially with some of these barrel aged beers that, it's hard enough to figure out what the hell's going on with the beer. And then when you throw a cigar in the mix, you really jack everything up.
It's like a palate shock almost.
Yeah. And that sounds like, what size, I know you're taking a sip there. What size bottle is that? How many ounces?
I think what's, first of all, what's nice is they're available singles.
Yeah.
Because they're not inexpensive. They're not actually, believe it or not, they're not that expensive, especially for a beer aged in a whiskey cask. I was expecting it to be way, way more. So this is just the standard 330, just a standard bottle.
Oh, so 12, so, is it 12 ounces?
Yeah. So I think, I don't know what the
what's the conversion there?
I don't know what the metric to.
Freedom gallons, dude.
But yeah, I think it's, I think that's 12 ounces.
I think that's 16.
Is it 16?
I think it might be a little bit bigger. Did you pour the entire beer in that glass?
I did.
Oh, then you're 12. Yeah. The bottle looks big, but yeah, that looks, that's definitely a nice glass. You, those are the Spiegelglau or whatever the hell, right?
Yeah. This is actually from good friends at, did the CL. They had a series of glasses and I was at a tasting event and he's and got chatting with the brewmaster there. And he's like, yeah, take some glasses. And I'm like, oh, fantastic.
I know a guy who loves Du DCL and he would, you know, he would put that glass to good use. I'm just saying.
Happy CBR is coming up. You never know what might happen.
Right, it's right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
So I'm diving into this the stout of the union, robust stout, and I'm getting a very interesting pairing that is so far off of where I was before, which I think it speaks a lot to the cigar itself, because this, we talk about some cigars being really versatile. And I've kind of run the gamut here from a pale ale to an IPA to robust stouts. I mean, we're kind of all over the map here. And this pairing, while it's not as good as the Moxymoron, because I'm just blown away by that, this is probably my second favorite pairing of the night. And I've enjoyed all three. From the beer, I'm getting kind of a chocolate creme brulee type thing happening, where you get that chocolate flavor and there's that kind of caramelized sugar on top.
Love that.
You know, yeah, creme brulee. I do love a brulee, but a kind of a chocolate brulee flavor. And I'm getting a nutty note out of the cigar on the retrohale that I haven't got at all, basically, tonight. Maybe a little bit at the beginning, but then it really went away. And you mix those two things together. You keep that spice from the cigar and that kind of toasty balance. It's like I've got like a snickerdoodle cookie, and I'm dipping it into this chocolate creme brulee. It's as good as that sounds. Yeah,
nothing sounds wrong with that at all.
Yeah, that doesn't suck. And that's what we're getting here. And it's amazing how these two beers, I mean, just looking at them, you can see how vastly different they are. One is kind of a golden amber, very, very clear. The other one is damn near black. And it's black. It's got a thick head on it. But they pair almost equally well. It's a testament to this Letellier cigar, which, I mean, it's been one of my favorites for a while, and I feel like I don't talk about it enough. I want to do a Redux review, because I don't even know if we've actually ever reviewed the cigar since we've instituted our scoring system, so I may have to do that. But I know we haven't reviewed this size, because it is an event only, but the blend's the same. But this pairing, it's amazing that this cigar can work with these three beers, in my opinion.
So talking about my pairing, the cigar's kind of fighting back now. And the spices that I was getting on the retrohale with the porter have come back and they're kind of pushing back. So I've kind of got this whiskey finish to the beer. So wonderful maltiness, that sweet whiskey with like a little bit of melon fruit in there. And then I take a retrohale of cigar and I get wonderful pepper and spices. So it's working. I think maybe I wasn't giving the beer enough time and the cigar enough time to sort of settle in, because, you know, you talk about palate shifts between different beers. And I mean, I didn't have as much of a dramatic shift as you, but going from a porter to a barrel aged stout, that's a big shift. And I think that my palate's sort of acclimating, I'm getting back to appreciating the whiskey notes that's in the beer, and the cigar is starting to establish itself again. I think it you know, you talk about, like you said, you know, hold up this lager, hold up the stout. I mean, these are vastly different beverages, and I love coming across a cigar like this where you can pair a wide range of, I mean, these are almost opposite end of the spectrum. Lagers are very light, very refreshing. Stouts are very heavy, very thick, very huge flavor forward. And yet it's working with each of the beers as we go down our beer ladder, as it were. So testament to Letellier for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's a testament to cigars in general, where I think in a way we, as a cigar smoking society, we're a little too delicate with our cigars. We, you know, I mean, they're in a sense, they're built to last in a way. I mean, yeah, you want to take care of them and you keep them at the right humidity and stuff. But if your cigar's out for a day or so, it's still going to be fine to smoke. And you know, we got a Maduro, so we feel like we need to pair it with a chocolate stout or something, or whiskey, or you know, a nice bourbon to make sure that we get that right pairing. But I mean, this cigar pairs with a with a rye and apple pale ale, a Imperial Session IPA, which I still think is funny, and a robust stout, and it pairs well with all three. So I guess the moral of the story, if there is a moral and there is a story, don't be afraid to try to pair your cigars with just about anything. If there's a beer that you like and there's a cigar that you like, try to have them together. Who knows? Maybe it's a Connecticut with a barrel-aged chocolate stout. You know, you're probably not going to have the best outcome with that, but you never know.
You never know. I mean, that's really been the resounding. I mean, oh, and I guess it's funny because we're almost at the end of our Armed Forces Radio Network segment, but I forgot to mention, we're only a couple days past our 2-year anniversary of sharing our pairings. I was on guest host on Stogie Geeks on Monday, and yeah, it was our 2-year anniversary of the show. If you can believe it, it's been 2 years since we've been doing the show.
Wow, yeah, that's awesome. 2 years, holy crap,
goes quick.
We're doing more shows now. That was, we were the once a month for a while, and then every 2 weeks, and now we're weekly. So you know, those numbers are going to start climbing as far as a number of shows. But that's awesome. I mean, again, I want to go back and listen to some of the shows at the beginning when we talk about beer, where it's like, you talked about like IBUs. I'm like, what the hell is an IBU? You know, like, and now it's totally changed where it's, I mean, now I'm making my own beer. So it could have
called it beer dummies.
Yeah. Right. And we've learned a lot. And, I hope that you guys have at least been entertained. Maybe able to pick up a nugget of information here and there. There's a question here in the chat room. Stefan was asking what size I'm smoking. It is a 5x50, I believe. It's their event only Robusto. It comes in those little 3-packs. Stefan, I know a guy who has a few, so if you want to try this size, I can hook you up. anyway, yeah. Actually, anybody who emails me, Rob@Cigar Federation, and has a good reason why I should send them a cigar, I'll send them one, as long as you're old enough to get cigars in your local jurisdiction. Boom. Email Rob@Cigar Federation, and they'll send you one or two of these event-only Atelier. I've got a few more packs, so I'll send you one or two cigars so you can try them on your own. But, yeah, no, that's awesome, man. 2 years. Holy crap.
Long time. So talking about some of the shows we got coming up, I'm very much looking forward to the fireworks that will be Cigar Chat on Thursday night as we have Glenn Loop of the CRA.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
I don't know that you're going to be doing much talking, but it's going to be a very interesting show.
No, this is what I've been telling everybody is I'm going to have a couple of beers set aside. I'm going to have a cigar. I'm going to light my cigar. I'm going to do a little intro. I'm going to say, hey, Glenn, how's it going? And, you know, tell us what's the latest, because there's this thing that passed to change the date. And I don't know. I haven't really read much into it because I want Glenn to explain it to me on Thursday. And then I'm just going to mute my microphone and stop talking because I figure Logan will go. I'll chime in with an audience question every now and again. But I have a feeling that Glenn's going to have his ducks in a row and be able to tell us some information that is going to take the sting out of a little bit of what Logan might have to say. But
I hope so, man, because otherwise the black bear's going to be all over him.
Yeah, it should be fun. It should be fun. I'm excited, and if nothing else, I want to get educated as to what is really going on. And if there's anybody that can tell me what's going on and what I can do, it's somebody who's representing Cigar Rights for America. So hopefully that's something that can happen. But yeah, that should be good. And we got a bunch of shows coming up. We're working for Cigar Chat. We're working on booking someone from Walt Drew Estate. We've got Villiger coming up. I believe we're going to have a show with Gurkha, which should be interesting. And a few different things. So it's going to a lot of good stuff coming up on Cigar Chat. Absolutely.
And I'm still working on a very special guest. We'll see if we can make that happen. Yes. Next Tuesday, we're going to be back at an earlier time. I know we've kind of been on Wednesday every week pretty consistently, but we have to accommodate our guests. And we've got a very special guest, Robert Holt from Southern Draw Cigars. We'd have him on to do some beer pairings. I mean, and it's going to be 2 weeks of beer pairings, but it'll be a lot of fun. Robert loves his craft beer. We're going to be pairing his Quick Draw Connecticut, which I just, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the review, but I'm surprised they haven't been lit up by Logan because I give it a box buy rating, which I don't throw out very much box. And wow. To throw out a box buy rating for a Connecticut Shade wrapper, you know that has to be a monster cigar. So you definitely want to tune in for that show on Tuesday. Get your questions in for Robert. Super, super classy guy and an enormous dude. One of the only dudes I know who's taller than Willie.
Yeah, Robert's a cool dude. We've had him on Cigar Chat. He definitely knows his beer, definitely knows his tobacco and cigars. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I've been running around crazy, been at the ballpark. I haven't had a chance to look at your review. I didn't realize you gave it a box buy. Holy
box crap. Buy, 94. Yeah.
And we're so that's going to be interesting. We're pairing with Connecticut. So and with beer. So that's going to be maybe I'll call myself out and do my barrel aged stout with the Connecticut. Like I said, you got to give it a shot. So we'll see.
Have some fun with it. So thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners that are out there. Rob says this on Cigar Chat every time, and certainly I echo the sentiment. We appreciate what you do out there. You are built to do things we are not, and we appreciate you are wherever you are in the world, keeping us safe. Hope you've been entertained for this hour, and we'll catch you next week on Tuesday. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. So, yeah, I picked up I like when a beer is in singles and I can try a pile of them in singles. So I ended up picking up a double of each of these. I'd already tried the 18 before and I knew, I mean, it was just like outrageously tasty. So I picked up the 12s. 12s are still good. 16s is very, very good. I mean, this is not a, you know, I wouldn't describe this as a session beer. It's not at all. It's a celebration beer. I mean, I should probably be having this with some steak or pasta, but, goes really well with a cigar. And I mean, it's a hell of a beer.
Yeah. Yeah. You find some interesting stuff. I have an Innocent Gun that was aged, I want to say in Scotch barrels, but I it's in the back of the fridge. I know I pulled it out one time. They get them at Costco, oddly enough. And they had one there the last time I was there. And it was the one that I have came in a box, but this other one, it came in like a case. And I want to say it was like $20. At Costco, of all things. Wow. It was probably like 35 or 40 at when it originally came out. I believe Costco gets some stuff after it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
When it's a barrel aged, that's fine. I'm okay.
It'll last. It'll keep.
Yeah. I'm okay if the beer is 6 months old. In fact, that gives me 6 months that I don't have to age it myself, just assuming that it's been aged correctly.
Yeah.
That's the thing you run into with Costco. They can sit in warehouses and it gets hot. But, yeah, I still haven't had that. I've had that beer in there for about a year, and I haven't had a chance to crack it open. So hopefully I'll do that before IPCPR. Maybe I'll do it on a show here. Who knows? But, yeah, man, this show has been good. This Sierra Nevada beer camp thing.
That sounded really cool.
I picked up the 12-pack because my wife and I are going to – they do festivals in each area that they had a beer that was released. So the first festival was in, they did one in Tampa, Florida on June 4th. They were in Seattle on the 11th, Milwaukee on the 11th. And then San Francisco is this Saturday, which my wife and I are going to, and it's sold out. That's good to see.
Wow.
I'm glad I got my tickets in time. And then they have one this weekend in Boston as well. And next weekend, June 25th, is going to be in Los Angeles. Now, I picked this up because I figure I'll do the reviews on Mixed and Mashed, and I posted, of the six, I posted the review of the Sweet Sunny South table beer, a Southern table beer.
Interesting.
Which, is very, very Saison-like. I would call it a Saison. I've seen it called a bunch of different things, like fruit or vegetable beer. Yeah. Or, all kinds of different things. But to me, it's the Saison. They use Saison, yeast. And I actually, it was 4.9% alcohol by volume, 23 IBUs. They've got they brew it with some fruit. I think they use peach, papaya, guava, and prickly pear. The pear definitely stood out. And if you know that Saison flavor, and they actually brewed it with corn grits, which I think is interesting. Black
Southern
tea.
Style.
Yeah, black tea and honeysuckle as well. I actually really, really enjoyed it. I posted the review on mixedandmash.com. You can check that out. And then my review tomorrow for Mixed and Mashed is going to be the the Session Rye with Hibiscus, which was a really interesting beer. 5.5% alcohol by volume. A little high for a session, but
yeah.
55 IBUs. It was very, very hop forward, in my opinion. Centennial, Comet, and Mosaic bittering hops. That's a lot of hops.
Yeah. But I guess it kind of have to be to stand up to the hibiscus, right?
Yeah, the hibiscus really comes through. They use Comet, Citra, Mosaic finishing hops. The hibiscus is in there, and it's got some, the rye is in there as well. So you get that kind of tangy spice, fruit, spice flavor. And it for a quote unquote session ale, because it's 5.5%, which seems a little bit high for me. But there was a ton going on, almost too much for me. I liked it. I found it very filling. But that review will be up tomorrow. The only one that I haven't had yet, outside of those two and then the three that we've had here tonight, is an Imperial Brown Ale with cocoa, which I'm very interested in. It's 8.5%, which is crazy for a brown ale. 35 IBUs. The hops don't really matter. Two row malt, Sierra Nevada estate malt, Munich and chocolate. They use wild Minnesota rice, Missouri oats, Illinois cacao nibs, and Indiana honey. It just sounds really, really interesting.
It's very, now, very prairie.
Yeah. Now I forget what I was going to say there. But anyway, wild rice and oats and cacao nibs and honey. It just sounds really, really interesting. I almost paired with that one tonight, but I didn't. I definitely wanted to do the rye pale ale. I definitely wanted to do the IPA, and I went with the stout as opposed to the brown ale. But it's an expensive 12-pack, but it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to get six different, vastly different beers from all over the country, from 30 different. It's just a really cool idea.
Now, we're going to take a bit of a turn on this show because we've got two questions from Stefan, and they are not at all related to pairing. But I'm going to answer them anyway because I appreciate audience questions. So I'm going to go with the softball question first. And he says, in one word, summarize what IPCPR will be like this year with the FDA stuff looming. Do you want to take a swing at that?
Is clusterfuck one word?
I think clusterfuck is one word.
There you go. That's my one word then.
boy, one word.
Well,
I'm gonna go frenetic.
There you go.
Frenetic. It's gonna be insane, man.
Another word we use in the booth at the Giants games, if something just really goes to shit. Like we'll call something a CF, it's a clusterfuck, or it's a PF. A PF, if you PF something, you really screwed it up. You know what a PF would be?
I think I have a pretty good sense of that.
It's a pig fuck.
I didn't know any sense of that at all.
If you PF something, you ran it into the ground. You set it on fire, and it's a pig fuck. But if there's a group of people and they go out to do something and it's just a total shit show, we call it a yard sale. Like they completely yard sale.
Nice.
So yeah, this could be a total. And really, you could say, you know what? I'm going to change my answer from clusterfuck to yard sale because it's got the double meaning. Because you could say a yard sale, like if you yard sale something, you completely screw it up. But if you're having a yard sale, you're trying to get rid of all your shit.
Yeah.
So it might be a little bit of both. I'm going yard sale.
Yeah, I know that one of the guests we had on Stogie Geeks on Monday was Recluse Cigars. He only has four lines. I'd say only. That's a pretty good portfolio, four lines. To give you a sense of what the landscape's going to look at the IPCPR, they're releasing 9 cigars. 9 fucking cigars. Mm. I mean, you know, we're kind of worked out our time and how much we need to spend at a booth. I feel like we're going to be spending 45 minutes at a booth just to cover all the shit that's going on with each individual vendor. Like it's going to be enormous.
Yeah. What did you smoke during the show?
I smoked 2 cigars. I smoked the Recluse Draconian, which was, I've never smoked that before, but that was a really, really good cigar. Like that was like, I mean, I was, you know, not really paying attention to it, but that's either high 5-pack or like a box split rating. I was very impressed.
I smoked that cigar and it's funny cause you actually sent me a message and you said, dude, you'd love this cigar. I smoked that in 2014.
Yeah.
Now I got my hands on it It was from the 2014 IPCPR, and it came in my like welcome bag. And they had a Recluse footband on it, this gigantic footband. Mm. And it's not even a footband. It's almost like, you know, when you get a cigar, it's got a cedar sleeve. So yep. It had this gigantic sleeve. It said Recluse on it. And you take that off. And on the inside was a map of IPCPR and with a star where their booth was.
That's
and
cool.
I thought that was genius. But I smoked the Toro, box press Toro.
Yep.
And do you want to know what I scored it?
I do.
Guess. Take a guess.
See, I would think you'd go with a 91, but now that you're asking me, I'm worried that you like scored it in the low 80s and I'm going to look like an idiot.
It was in my top 10 of the year.
Nice. All right, good. So I do have a pretty good sense of your balance then.
I give it a 94.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was a box buy for me.
It was a hell of a cigar.
Fantastic cigar that nobody, and under my final thoughts, the first word I wrote was scrumptious.
Wow.
it's just a fantastic, fantastic smoke. And I don't have any. I'm going to have to buy some. And I don't think the SigFed store has them. But and we've had Scott. It's Scott Weeks, right?
Scott Weeks, yeah.
Yeah, we've had him on Cigar Chat, too. We should reach out to him again. Because the Amadeus that he did had good reviews, too, which I think was a Connecticut. I haven't smoked that one yet. I've got a sample, but I haven't smoked it yet. But yeah, that Draconian, dude, I love that cigar.
Yeah, and what's funny is a lot of people, I was kind of reading some, you know, as prep for the show, a lot of people were kind of busting Coop's balls, and Coop isn't a guy that just throws out, I mean, I would say Coop of anyone doesn't throw out high ratings at all. Like, you have to be a hell of a cigar, and Coop has been all over Recluse stuff from the start, and a lot of people were like, well, you know, get off Recluse's dick, and it's like, no, you don't understand. If Coop is all over that cigar, that's a good cigar. And he said point blank, I don't know why everyone isn't all over these cigars. They're really fucking good. But for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's the name or just the timing of the year, but they've kind of been sliding into the radar. And like I said, when I tried that Draconian, I was like, how's this not been on my radar? This is a fucking good cigar. Like, this is a cigar that I should have reviewed. I should be paying attention to the releases. Like, you should have tons of reviews on the sites. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, Coop is a lot like me, and I may be speaking out of turn here, but I think if I get a cigar and it's crap, like if the cigar sucks, I'm not going to review it. And I mean, say about that what you will, I don't take any joy in giving a cigar a 70.
Uh-huh.
I the most recent cigar I reviewed was, and I actually gave it a very low score. But that was because I've committed to reviewing all the Skinny Monsters.
Yep.
And it was the Skinny Drac, which I did not like. And I've never really liked the Drac. Yep. But the Skinny was the worst of the bunch for me. And I gave it an 80, which really doesn't sound that bad. But under ours, it was, I'd smoke them if I had a few.
Yeah.
Or I'd smoke them if I had them. And it's the lowest score in that. And the score below that was, I'd have it around for my moochin buddies. And that's not really an apt description for me, because it's not the kind of cigar that you end up with a bunch of them. I would have it because I bought a sampler. But, you know, when they release the Skinny Monsters in five packs and boxes and all that, I will not be buying the Drac. I just won't do it. It doesn't fall under something that I would enjoy. But the point that I'm making is, I don't give a lot of low scores because I only review cigars that I like. So in a way, if there's a cigar out there that a lot of people are talking about and I've never reviewed it, that's my low score.
Yeah.
For Jason, me, I feel like Coop is kind of the same way, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, Jason Raybug from our Cigar Federation chat just mentioned, and good point. The Amadeus got Cigar of the Year from Cigar Authority. And I remember tuning into Cigar Authority because I listen to a lot of podcasts when I'm on the road. I like listening to other shows and kind of hearing their take on stuff. And I remember hearing that. And I remember, I don't know why, but I just kind of dismissed it because I'd never really heard of it. And I was like, yeah, Cigar of the Year, whatever. Like, I'm sure they're paying you advertising money. But now I'm thinking, no, they probably did the exact same thing as Coop, is they're reviewing the cigar that not a lot of people maybe have heard of, but is, for whatever reason, flying under the radar. And Cigar of the Year, that's a huge, that like, that's not a, you know, that's not a, they're paying our advertising dollars. This is like, you guys need to go out and buy this blind. And they gave the Amadeus the Cigar of the Year.
Interesting. I the Cigar of the Year stuff, I mean, I take all that, it's all with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I think if, if you see a site or a magazine or somebody who gives the cigar of the year, maybe do a little searching on their website and see, hey, do they really always jock this brand? And sometimes they do. Does this brand advertise with them a lot? Sometimes they do. And I'm not trying to discredit anybody. I just, for me to put, to validate something, a cigar of the year rating, are they always jocking this particular company? Well, maybe. Is that particular company giving them something? Who knows? Like for me, if you go back and like, if you're looking at the show now, I've got my Crowned Heads hat on and I usually have one on because John gives me a lot of hats. Does that mean that I'm going to give him good ratings? No. I'm a big fan of most of the cigars that he comes out with. I think the last cigar of the year that I did was Maya Silva. And granted, Maya Silva does advertise with us, but they didn't advertise with us when I gave him Cigar of the Year.
Yeah.
Because that was a damn good cigar.
Yeah, and it was a damn good cigar.
I've gone through boxes and boxes of that Maya Silva Maduro of the number 5 or number 15 or whatever it is, the Torpedo and the Robusto. I think the Robusto might even be a little bit better. But I don't know what the point that I'm trying to make is, but whatever.
Well, I'm going to get into the last question, which is the heater question from Stefan. And this will probably just finish up the show. So the question is, do you think that the major cigar groups, the CRAI, PCPR, I assume you mean to throw the CAA on there as well, have already given up the ghost? I read today that the IPCPR is having an educational seminar entitled Working with the FDA Regulations. Do you get the impression that they aren't fighting this? Do you want me to take the lead on that?
I'll answer and then you can go. I actually hadn't read the question, so the first time I'm hearing it is now. I think the fact that IPCPR is having a seminar called Working with the DEA or Working Within Their Regulations, that doesn't say anything to me except for...
It's funny that you said DEA in the place of FDA.
Did I say DEA?
You totally did.
Working with the FDA.
Freudian slip for sure.
That's funny. I didn't realize I did that. Does that to me say that they're giving up? No, that to me says that they've got information and they want to make sure that some of the smaller companies or maybe even the bigger companies who may not have the information or may be disseminating the information incorrectly want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. That to me is more of an organization of information and education. Doesn't necessarily say they're giving up. That's how I interpret it. But I have no idea what the content is going to be. But I'm one to give the benefit of the doubt. And what's the second part of the question?
Second part, do you get the impression they aren't fighting this?
I get the impression that the big companies, I'll speak of cigar companies, I get the feeling that the Generals, the Altadis, the fucking Davidoffs and those of the world, I feel like, no, that they have nothing to lose here. Maybe Davidoff loses to Nicaragua, but they have enough cash to back them up so they can pay for whatever tests they need to pay for. I don't feel like they're really in it to win it because they win either way.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I'm not a business major. I'm not a lawyer. I can't speak about most of this intelligently. This is just my opinion and what I've observed. I don't know anything that you guys don't know. I feel like there's a lot of smaller companies out there. And when we had, if you haven't watched the show, the Viva Republica show on Cigar Chat, go and watch it. If you're interested in this topic, because Jason speaks about this very, very candidly. Jason is a smart, smart man and has some governmental background and is very well educated. And he speaks on these topics in a way that makes it very easy for average folk like myself to digest. And he has a plan. And I think there's a lot of smaller companies that are getting on that bandwagon and he wants to work with these guys saying, hey, let's band together and you know, try to fight this and do the best we can to, you know, tackle these issues as they come at us. I don't feel like anybody's giving up as far as like CRA or anything like that. I mean, this is their job is to fight this stuff. I know Logan's been very critical. There's a window of time where work can be done. And we're still in that window. So the fact that work hasn't been done yet just tells me that it hasn't been done hastily, but there's also been a lot of time to prep for it. So I can kind of see both sides of the argument. And I understand why Logan is so upset about it and why when he gets going, he really starts freaking out. because really this is something that's been in the works for a while. We all knew this was coming, and the fact that nothing was done on day one says that you know, maybe they weren't prepared for it. But like I said, I'm willing to give that benefit of the doubt until someone says something that's in a position of power at one of these places, like Glenn Loop, who's going to be on Cigar Chat tomorrow. If Glenn says something that I can, and the way I absorb it is we've lost this battle, then I'll start thinking that way. But until then, I'm not going to.
I talked at length about the Canadian cigar market on Coop, and I'm not on Stogie Geeks, and I'm not going to rehash it, but
Before you move forward, where can people find that? Because Stogie Geeks isn't available on the Cigar Federation Network anymore.
It is not. So if you have a podcast catcher like Podcast FM or Google Play or Podbean or any of the other podcast catchers, iTunes, you can pick up Stogie Geeks now. I don't think the show is going to be out this week. I think it's going to be out next week because, you know, they need to take some time to process the audio. But have a good listen. If you want to hear, you know, I think I give a pretty fair and measured idea of what the market is in Canada. And I think that cigar smokers out there need to know what the future can hold, because there was a time where the cigar market in Canada was very similar to the cigar market in the United States. And it's changed dramatically. And I have a pretty good insight. I previously had a pretty good insight as an aficionado here in Canada. I have a very strong insight now being in the industry in Canada. And I can tell you it's doom and gloom up here. And it's only getting worse with the potential, and I say potential, but it's probably going to go through for sure, potential plain packaging laws, which could completely screw the entire tobacco industry over in Canada. Like, I mean, you know, 18 kinds of fucked. But again, I don't want to rehash that because it was like a 45-minute discussion, and I don't want to rehash that on a pairing show. But to answer the Stefan's questions, which, you know, we're going to get a lot of these questions going up to the IPCPR, and we're going to get lots of these questions going after the IPCPR. I would say that I am extremely disappointed that they've had 4 years to prepare for this, that the FDA was very clear about there was going to be option one or option two, and that was your two choices. There's not going to be any magical unicorn riding in to change it. It was option one or option two. They knew. They tipped their hand in poker. They basically said, bro, I've either got three of a kind or I've got a full house. And they didn't prepare for it at all. And I say that because they had more than enough time to strategize and be prepared and have a brief and ready for that announcement. And then, like, within that first week, they should have been good to go. Absolutely good to go. But I am extremely disappointed with the attitude of not aficionados, but general cigar smokers and store owners, and I'm going to throw them all under the bus collectively. Their attitude towards this FDA thing is bullshit. And this is the problem we had in Canada, is that everyone said, well, it's not in my backyard. It doesn't affect the brands I smoke, so I don't care. Well, the problem with that is that it does affect your brands. It might not affect your brand on August 8th, when this date goes through, but I guarantee you it's going to affect your brand within a year or 2 years, because the prices are going to go up, the selections are going to go down, your choices for a cigar smoker are going to go away. You're going to see much more aggressive laws go through with where you can smoke and how much you're paying to smoke. This is going to affect you. Now, most of the people listening to this show are probably cigar aficionados, so I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, but I just had to get that out of the way because the lackadaisical attitude that I've received over the last couple of years talking about this with American cigar smokers in general has been, I'm not really too worried about that. And you absolutely should be worried about this. People who own guns in the States are freaked out all the time about the American government taking away their guns. Cigar smokers should have been freaking out about the FDA taking away their cigars, because that is absolutely their mandate. 100%. Their mandate is to take cigars away from you. Make no doubt about it. They're looking to stop you from smoking cigars, period. That is their number one goal. So that being said, I don't think it's as bad as it's, I think that there's enough clout. I think that there's enough money in the industry that it's not going to be, everyone is screwed, but it's not going to be magical unicorns and ponies. It's going to land somewhere in the middle. I think that if they can get this predicate date changed, I think that would be the huge victory here. because I think there's an enormous amount of boutique cigars that we've come to know and love. And I think it would be a tremendous shame, not only for the industries in the United States, but obviously the people that invested a lot of money in this, not to mention the trickle down of the real impact that's going to have to all these cigar producing nations. And these are real people losing their jobs. It's going to cause a pretty massive economic impact to these countries. But I do think it's going to land somewhere in the middle. I think if this predicate date can be overturned, that would be an enormous victory. And I think that's the one everyone should hope for, because I think that's really the only victory that people can hope for at this point. I don't think the FDA stuff is going away. I don't think these lawsuits are going to do anything. I think that barring a miracle, the hand of God coming down, this is not going away.
So and I like the way that you stated that. You didn't get too fired up, and I mean, you stated your point eloquently, and you're not even American, which I think is kind of funny that you have a passion about this. And it doesn't impact you.
Well, here's the funny thing, Rob. It does impact me. So if the cigar pricing, and it will, goes up in price in the United States, and it will, it's absolutely going up in Canada. And it's going up in Australia, and it's going up in Europe, because the 48% of the world's market is the United States. These companies are going to have to raise their prices because of the application process. They're going to have to raise their prices because of just general costs incurred. So you're going to see, like, even if it's only a couple bucks, and that doesn't, like, it's funny because you talk to an American and they think, 80 cents on a cigar, well, that's bullshit. 80 cents tax, that's fucking crazy. My $8 cigar is $8.80. Okay, that seems really terrible until you come to the Canadian market and now you're paying $30 for that cigar. And that $1 raise in price, that seems really terrible to you. Well, guess what, bub? That's a $7 raise when it gets up here.
Yeah, I hear you. And Logan and I have talked about this. When it comes to cigars, are a luxury item. And I get that. And I know that they're not good for me. And I get all that too. But and if the taxes go up or the prices go up, that's fine. I'll adjust. I'd prefer they didn't, but I would rather have the taxes go up than have them go away. So, but be that as it may, the point you're making, or at least the way that I'm understanding the point that you're making, is that this is happening, or at least as far as you're concerned, this is happening. The best thing that can happen now is they change the predicate date. Now, I've been seeing posts on Facebook, but I haven't looked at them, that the FDA has changed, the vote has gone through to change the predicate date. No. I'm reading that incorrectly?
Well, so this is kind of, and I think this is probably where maybe some of the strategy from the CRA and the CAA and the IPCPR is coming through, where unfortunately that people are kind of regurgitating information that's old. There is a bill rider that was passed back in April to change the predicate date. And that's good. That's a really positive thing. Unfortunately, that was the easiest part of that to approve. It still needs to go through two more steps. I believe it needs to pass in the Senate, and then it needs to pass in the House in order to go through. And honestly, it'd be a slim chance that it's going to go through the Senate, and it's probably a 5% or 10% chance it's going to go through the House. Like, it's very unlikely that it's going to pass both reviews.
Yeah. Okay. So the best thing at this point, there's going to be regulation. There's going to be hoops that people have to jump through. And the best thing that we can hope for, if you're interested in this topic and if you're still listening, you must be, then you have to tune in for Cigar Chat tomorrow, because it's going to be a very important show, because we'll have Glenn Loop of CRA on with us, and he can talk about this intelligently like I can't. But it sounds like the best thing that we can hope for is a predicate date that changes from, January of 2006.
February of 2007.
Awesome. February of 2007 to, more like whenever this law is passed. So
yeah, it's August of 2016.
If it's passed in August of 2016, that's the predicate date. But it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. Anyway, I mean, we could talk about this till we're blue in the face.
For sure.
But it's fucked either way. Let's wrap it up, because we've been here for like an hour and a half. But to go back and it's, it's funny when you say like people posting stuff that's information that's old. I saw a lot of people posting that the FDA is now coming after craft beer, And there was a post, dude, I'm getting weird lighting here. I apologize. A post about how craft beer has to now put the calories on their bottles, which a lot of them don't. And that is going to go into effect, and it's going to cost X amount of dollars and blah, blah, blah. It's going to screw the whole industry, blah, blah, blah. And everybody's posting the story. And it was written in like March of 2015.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, one of our SigFed members posted, I'm like, bro, that's like 9 months old.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, if that's something that has to happen, that's fine. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you see it's going to happen and there's a date you have to have it done by, then you have it done by then. That's a little bit different. I mean, I don't know how you test the caloric intake of your beer, but I imagine it's not that difficult. If you have to test the caloric intake of it, or the calorie numbers, I don't know what you call it, but,
this has been in Canada and Europe and the rest of the world for like, I don't know, 5 years, 4 years.
Yeah. For the most part, big brands. I know we went through a thing where beers that were called light beer, they had to say what makes it a light beer. It can't just be that it's light in color.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be, if it's a light beer, it has to have less than X amount of calories, blah, blah, blah. And that happened. And I get that. And I don't give a shit about light beer. But they have money to pay for that. I think the issue with this is if it was in order to be available at restaurants and to pour things on tap and bars, you have to have this information available. And to get the information, I think, is the hard part. So that could be tough for some really, really small micro brews, nano breweries, what they're called now. I think for the most part, that's not that big of a deal. But again, I'm not that educated on the topic. But it just goes to the point that you were making, that a lot of old information is making its way back into circulation like it's new, when it's really not.
Yeah, the time to freak out was 4 years ago. It's too late now. Don't freak out. Have a cigar. Take the information in. Try to do what you can, and try to keep calm. Stay calm.
Real quick, I'm dry hopping my first all grain IPA. Is 100% my recipe. And I used, just going to pull up my recipe here. I used some 2-row as my base malt. I did California Select 2-row. I used some Munich malt for body. I used some Crystal Malt 80 Lovabond for color. And I used some Kara Pilsner malt, just a little bit, just for mouthfeel. And I did 1.25 ounces, one and a quarter ounces of Centennial hops for my bittering, and my flavor and aroma hops are Amarillo and Citra, and I'm dry hopping with both of those as well. So I'm excited. I tasted it the other day, and it tasted pretty good, and I think the dry hopping is going to do wonders for it, and I'm going to bottle either late tomorrow or early Friday, and we can test it out in a couple weeks. I'm excited.
Yeah, the recipe sounds good. I mean, I know nothing about brewing, but the recipe sounds good, so I'm excited for you.
Yeah, it was supposed to be an Imperial IPA. It was supposed to be at 8.8%, and my original gravity came in a little bit low because I think I used a little bit too much water. So, but my yeast did its job, so I still ended up around 6.6.
That's not bad.
So it's a little bit lighter than it should have been, but I ended up with more beer. I was supposed to.
That sounds all right.
Yeah. It's like, well, like you brew a 5 gallon batch, you're getting two cases of beer. So it's 48, 12 ounce bottles. And that's a lot, especially when you're talking about an IPA that's been dry hopped. That's a lot to drink in a month.
Yeah. It better not suck.
After a month, you're losing that dry hop. So you got to power through it. And unfortunately, I'm not a member of like a home brewing club or anything yet. So I don't have anybody to give the beer to. So if you're in the Bay Area, give me a call or shoot me an email and I'll give you some beer because I need to power through it. But no, I'm excited. I've got the Beer Camp Across America festival this Saturday. And then next weekend is my brewing class up in UC Davis. So I'm really, really excited about that. And I bought my first textbook in about, I don't know, what year is it? 2016?
It is 2016.
I was in college in the late 90s, so it's been a while since I bought a textbook. a brewing textbook. So I'm excited, man. I'm head first down the rabbit hole.
Well, I look forward to on a future show hearing how that recipe went.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we'll hear it in an After Dark segment. So as we said, tune in tomorrow night for Glen Loop. That'll be an interesting show for sure. And definitely check out Sharing Our Pairings next week with Southern Draw Cigars. That'll be a blast for sure. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less.